Yes, you are listening to the Mighty Boo KBOO Portland. Just a minute before 10 o'clock. In 15 minutes on today's Flashpoints, indigenous tribes living under occupation at the U.S.-Mexico border. Also, a look at U.S. counterinsurgency in southern Ukraine. Are Russian troops really massing for an invasion? At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews writer Lori Moore, who has earned a place among the best and most beloved of American writers. And at 11:30 on the film show, they welcome Janet Wasko of the What Is Documentary Conference. Then groundbreaking indie filmmaker Penny Allen makes a return appearance to KBOO in advance of a weekend-long retrospective of her work at the Hollywood Theater. And finally, Carolee Harrison and Heather Petricelli join us from Special Collections at the Portland State University Library. That's all coming up this morning, but first it's Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary coming up next.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Pete Seeger Tribute and Sing-Along on Saturday, May 3rd, from 3 to 10 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. On what would have been Pete Seeger's 95th birthday, his life and legacy will be honored with song, remembrances, and a talk by Joe Hickerson. Again, that's Saturday, May 3rd, at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, April 24th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. First, some headlines. We'll be speaking with the director of Cascadia Wildlands, Francis Etherington, and later on in the program on the Elliott State Forest and the latest attempt to clear-cut some of our last, most fragile habitat. If this sounds like a story you've heard before, yes, you have, and you'll keep hearing it until these wildlands are at last and forever preserved, whatever it takes. The problem, too many people vying for dwindling natural resources and taking an ever more short-sighted view. People who don't live here, who have no stake. No one lives anywhere anymore. The power of the multinational corporation at the moment is what is wreaking havoc because no one has a foot on the ground or a horse in the race. So, first the headlines, though. The Federal Communications Commission will propose new rules that allow internet service providers to offer a faster lane through which to send video and other content to consumers as long as a content company is willing to pay for it. The proposed rules are a complete turnaround for the FCC on the subject of so-called debt neutrality, which we thought that was yet another battle that had been successfully fought and laid to rest. The principle that internet users should have equal ability to see any content that they choose and that no content providers should be discriminated against in providing their offerings to consumers, net neutrality, it seems that somehow the fix is in. Moving right along, VP Joe Biden is off to Kiev on a two-day mission to bring some of that old-time religion America style to that troubled region. But as history is amply displayed, democracy looks a hell of a lot like capitalism at the end of a gun. During his two-day visit this week to Kiev, Biden unfurls President Barack Obama's U.S. crisis. Get this. Here's how it's being marketed. You can almost see it. This is new, improved family size U.S. crisis support package for Ukraine. A key part of the package involves promoting the deployment of hydraulic fracturing. That's right. That's how we're going to help. That's how we're helping Ukrainians. Fracking. That'll solve all their problems. Yep. It boggles the mind. Doing missionary work, that's what it's called. In this case, it involves the U.S. acting as a modern-day missionary to spread the gospel of fracking to further its own interests. I wish I were making this up, but I'm not. We have Francis hanging on the line. Just one couple more of these notes that we really do need to get to. Federal protection status for a population of grizzly bears facing extinction in the mountains of Idaho and northwest Montana. Astonishingly, they're not listed. They're listed currently as threatened but not endangered. There's a lawsuit that has been filed. The Montana-based Alliance for the Wild Rockies is asking a judge to order the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to strengthen protections for the fewer than 50 grizzlies that roam the Cabot Mountains and the river drainage. The group also wants tougher restrictions on logging, road construction, and other human activities. These are federal lands that constitute crucial habitat for the bears in this particular ecosystem. And the U.S. Congressional Budget Office report another endangered species is students. And again, another symptom of the vast widening gap between the wealthiest and everyone else is in the area of education, higher education specifically, where increasingly the benefits, the perks of more and better education are being denied to more people all the time. It grows increasingly expensive, and as one commits to virtual indentured servitude to the rest of one's natural life by simply dipping a toe in the waters of academia. So the Congressional Budget Office finds that over the next decade, the Department of Education is going to be raking in over $127 billion in interest payments from student loans. Huge profits are being made off of students. That's the reason that the big banks love education loans. Now, and these are loans that you can never get rid of. You cannot declare bankruptcy. You can't do anything about it. You basically go to your grave with it. They're making huge profits off of students, and the federal government's getting in on the racket too. It's time that we look at innovative state-based solutions, and get the banks and the federal government out of the education business. It's time to break the student debt cycle, isn't it? Isn't it about time? Aren't we somewhat well past that time? And again, to return to the subject of fracking, a family claiming they were sickened because of pollution from fracking operations near their home could be awarded $3 million for their troubles. This is the Parr family. They're suing Aruba Petroleum. It goes back to 2011. They say that the oil and gas producer exposed them to hazardous gases and chemicals and industrial waste seeping into the air from 22 wells drilled near the family's 40-acre plot of land, which sits atop the Barnett Shale, yet another lucrative target for the fracking the fracking business. You know, you have to think about it this way, too. You might think you own the land where your house or your farm or whatever is situated, but you don't own the mineral rights underneath it. Someone else might very well own those rights, and they might very well be looking to make some money off of whatever lies beneath. We want to speak now with Francis Etherington, director of Cascadia Wildlands, and one of the most articulate voices speaking out on behalf of the Elliott Forest. There is so much at stake here. There is so much at risk. It's a fragile habitat, and what never is spoken of is that all of this is interconnected. And if we expect to survive as a species, which is looking less and less likely all the time, it is imperative that we now take immediate and serious steps to preserve it, as far as preserving the Elliott and other tracts of land like it. Good morning, Frances, and thanks for being with us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, you certainly have spoken frequently on the subject. We really need to hear your voice is raised in opposition to logging anything anywhere on the Elliott Forest, and talk a little bit about why this recent move on the part of it doesn't even look legal to me, but there you go, the effort to sell off more of Elliott and log it. How did we end up here again?
Well, you know, the Elliott State Forest is a big state forest. It's over by Reedsport, sort of between Reedsport and Coos Bay near the Oregon coast. And because it's so close to the ocean, and because the Elliott is the only state forest that's never been completely clear-cut before, it still has many of its native forests there, it is really a haven for an endangered seabird called the marbled murrelet. This bird spends its whole life at the sea, but nests and raises its young at big trees near the ocean. And so this is protected under the Endangered Species Act. And the Oregon Department of Forestry has been having a hard time logging as much as they wanted to out of the Elliott and not killing this seabird. And We monitored their activities and found out that's exactly what they were doing. So we brought them to court, and we asked them to only do legal timber sales. That is, not clear-cutting the native, the biggest, the oldest forest that they have as fast as they can is what they were doing. And we won in court, and as a result, the Oregon didn't have any timber sales for 1 year, and they said, oh, we lost money. And because we lost money this 1 year, you know, we're going to have to start selling off the Elliott. And we are very upset about that because there's a lot of ways that the Elliott can benefit Oregonians economically, and you don't have to sell it off for that to happen. One, you know, half the Elliott has been logged, and you can thin in those managed plantations for many years to come. It would be very lucrative, provide a lot of jobs and wood. And another thing is, when we start to tax carbon pollution, the Elliott will be a real moneymaker because this forest and this area of our coast range in Oregon has the potential to store more carbon per acre than any other place in the world, including tropical rainforest. And also, this area is really a boon. It could be a boon to recreation. It's right there by the Oregon Dunes and the Dean Creek Elk Viewing Area. It's right in the hub of a huge recreation area. And so, you know, how many trails through old-growth temperate rainforest do we have in Oregon? It could be a big draw. And it's great hunting and fishing area. And so selling, I mean, because they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar 1 year, they're going to sell and couldn't make any money. Now they want to start to sell off the forest.
Selling it off, the idea of, it's one thing to cut down trees on a tree farm. It's one thing to you know, harvest asparagus or whatever. This is a living creature. This is a living thing that's evolved over millions and millions of years.
Right.
And cutting it, it's not like, oh, we'll just replant. We're going to do reforestation. It's like, oh, let's plant a tree for the environment. No, that is not going to help. That is unbelievably short-sighted, and again, we haven't learned anything, it seems. Nothing.
Well, one of the problems is that, they just sold three parcels on the Elliott. They plan to sell two more this fall, and then there's talk about selling the entire Elliott in the near future, all because last year they lost money. By the way, right now there's a lot of timber sales progressing on the Elliott. There are four or five sales out there that's not in murrelet habitat. They just had another auction. It's not like there's gridlock out there. The problem is that they can't clear-cut old growth. And if they can't clear-cut old growth, that they just feel like that's what they have to do.
What do we do about this? What do we do? It has to be stopped. people seem to lack courage now. We take it to the court, and it's more and more difficult all the time. It's become virtually illegal to protest a DC.
You know,
what do we do?
Well, we have a letter to the governor on our website. And one thing you can do is write the letter to governor. Come to our website, taskwild.org, and go to the action items, and you can send a letter to the governor telling him not to sell the Elliott, really protect it for all the public values that it offers us, a huge amount of ecosystem services that are very valuable for us. You know, and one of the biggest problems is that the state decided that since no one can clear-cut it, they valued it very, very low. They considered the value of the timber to be $12.5 million. Yet you know what they sold it for? $4.5 million.
Francis, we're out of time.
$8 million.
We're flat out of time. The saddest part is that this comes down to money. One of the most beautiful ancient treasures that on Earth, and it all comes down to how much they can get for it. Thanks so much. We've been speaking with Francis Etherington, the executive director of Cascading Wildlands. I just want a quick note on the International Middle East Media Center's website. Sayed Ben Noura has a piece on the Fatah-Hamas agreement and end to negotiations. Israeli Foreign Minister and head of Israel, Our Home Party, Avigdor Lieberman, said yesterday the signed agreement between Fatah and Hamas movements is an end to political negotiations. They're thinking of, get this, more sanctions and restrictions on the Palestinians after the Israelis do nothing but squeal when someone speaks about boycott, sanction, and against Israel in order to create some leverage so that the Palestinian people have a faint chance of drawing a breath of air for once.